Welcome back to Community Connections, and I'm talking, we're about to talk to our private investigator, Peter, from Absolute Facts. Unfortunately, Peter hasn't been with us the last couple of months. He's been tied up in a couple of things and moving places, but great to have you back, Peter.
Yes, thank you for having me. I hope I'm not too rusty.
No, you'll be all right. We'll get along well. Peter, I think we last time when we sent you away with something, we were talking about retail theft, and you were going to have a bit of a look at that for us.
Yeah, we were. So basically what we were saying there was that I think you were after some specific numbers, more Australian-based than anything else. A little bit of a segue in a way, there was Victoria Police crime stats came out where they were talking about the children aged 13 and under, that they're becoming more involved in aggravated robberies and common assaults. And as part of that, it was saying that retail theft committed by them, or shop stealing, which was once the most common offence, had actually declined by 51%. Which was interesting. However, then the rider came through. The fact is that police are starting to issue infringement notices rather than actually laying criminal charges. So probably more the reason.
It's gone down.
Yeah, the reason for the drop in the figure there. So it was quite an interesting information that came out, Alan, about the younger age group, 10 to 13. Particularly the trend towards more violent crime. And they were saying that part of that 57% of the offenders between the age of 10 and 13 that had been picked up for those sort of things had been witnesses to family violence. So there was sort of a factor there. And in fact, one in three or one third had previous contact with police as a victim of family violence. Which is a bit of a shame.
Absolutely.
And with quite a few of them actually in state care as well, because of the domestic family violence history. And before you ask the male-female breakup, 70% were put down as male.
True.
In that committing offences in that age group, yeah.
Peter, am I right that there's a move afoot by the government not to even charge some of these 14 and unders?
Yeah, that's the trend. And again, it sort of leans back to the comment about the police are actually issuing infringement notices rather than trying to pursue criminal charges for people of, the 10 to 13 category, soon to be the 14 and under category. So, yes.
So, but they're still, and they're still involved in aggravated burglary too, aren't they?
Well, that was what they're saying here. The trend is that they're becoming more violent, probably, again, unfortunately, because they've seen the violence themselves or even experienced themselves in the family home.
Gee, that makes it hard, doesn't it?
Yep.
So, Peter, we've just had a question come in. You're obviously, I'm talking to you in an office now. How much time would you spend out in the field as opposed to in your office?
Yeah, look, I've been very fortunate. It's one of the reasons probably why I enjoy my job is, Alan, I can have, I would have said pre-pandemic, it would have been a very good 50-50 split where I'd be sitting in the office doing desktop type things and doing reports and making inquiries and putting things together. Yep. And the other 50% of the week as a rough proportion, I'd be sitting out in the car monitoring something or waiting for something to happen or trying to find something or someone.
Yep.
But probably now, to be perfectly honest, it's probably more about 70% in the office and 30% actually out in the field these days.
Peter, I'll just ask you one other question. When you just said that you're out trying to find, you could be out trying to find someone. When you're doing that, is it because someone ask you to find somebody, or if you're doing it trying to find someone because you think they're a crook?
Probably a little bit of both. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to go out and bother finding someone for no reason. So obviously, I'm out there for a reason. It's also about making connections as well. So it might be establishing what is at an address, which may or may not turn out to be a relevant address, yep. but it's a possible address. So quite often we're trying to perhaps confirm a vehicle, a particular vehicle at an address, or maybe just establish what vehicles are at a particular location and then see whether that turns out to be of any use further down the track.
Peter,
it's a bit of a mix. So, I mean, I just put up a post the other day on Facebook, actually, because I hadn't put one up for a while. But basically what the essence of it was is ideal in what you call confirm and deny. So that's part of the confirm and deny process. If it's not on the desktop, sometimes you've just got to get on your horse and get out and have a look because you don't know. I mean, you know, so many times you'll get out to a location, particularly these days, and the house has been pulled down and it's an empty plot of land. So it's not a relevant address.
Do you ever get any people coming to you and say, look, I haven't seen my brother, sister or anything for 20 years or they've just disappeared? Do you ever do any of that work at all?
Occasionally, yeah, not so many of them. But yeah, they do pop up from time to time. So again, it's the strength of the information that you're given. Obviously, it's generally easier to find a male than a female because, of course, a female can get married and change surname. So look, the result I get is probably dependent on the depth and value of the information that's given. And also remembering, of course, you know, if you're looking for a William Smith or Mr. Ng, N-G, good luck with that.
Peter, do you ever find somebody that doesn't want to be found, says to you, go away, I don't want to know the family or whoever it is trying to find me?
I probably wouldn't necessarily make contact with the person myself unless that was part of the instructions. I'd probably just tend to give them an indication as to how they might seek contact with someone, unless, of course, I was fearful or suspected that could be for, you know, ill-gotten purposes. In that case, I probably either wouldn't even take the job on in the first place or not pass the information on or perhaps preempt it and contact the person beforehand just to get a feel for the lay of the land to make sure that, you know, nothing untoward might happen.
That's fair enough. I've just got to take a quick break, Peter. We'll be back with more.
Put a little love in your heart and the world.
I'm talking to our private investigator, Peter, from Absolute Facts. Peter, you'd like to talk a bit about struggling business owners. I think there are plenty of them out there at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the subheading under that particular article that I had a look through was worse to come. Worse to come, yes. So, look, basically what it was that it was setting out that there'd been a 17% increase in company insolvencies in the past financial year, and that was ASIC releasing that number, saying 5,520 administrations and liquidations nationally to the 30th of June. I assume that meant 30th of June 2023. I think the article came out in early July, very early July. And what they're saying is it's a 17.2% increase from 4,710 the year before, with Victoria showing an increase of 39%.
Mainly due to the lockdown, I suppose, was it?
Look, I think it's the probably the post-JobKeeper kind of hangover or whatever that obviously propped a lot of businesses up, and I think they've hung on as long as they can, and now, you know, the rubber's really starting to hit the road with interest rate rises. Obviously, the main sector or the main highlighted sector, of course, has been home builders. Probably don't need to say much more about that. The other categories that were coming of note were food delivery businesses, weight loss, Jenny Craig, of course, the example there, alcoholic beverages, which I thought was a bit of a surprise. But
yeah, that's a surprise.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like those micro brewery type setups that are trying to, you know, find a niche in the market and consumption, and presumably consumption sort of in the actual place, the venue is probably down, I should imagine. And then one of the other categories, of course, was the whole sort of crypto industry with the FTX debacle and things like that. And the other warning was one of the things that the administrators and liquidators were pointing out was company directors who are ignoring penalty notices from the ATO. That seems to be something that they're noticing with people that eventually finish up under their umbrella, is that they've basically the ATO's been chasing them and they've just put their head in the sand and hung on as long as they can until the point that either the ATO intervenes or they've just got to put their hands up and say we just can't do this anymore.
Gee, you'd be game to take on the ATO, wouldn't you?
Well, my experience is, and if you read a lot of the articles, it seems to me that whenever businesses go under, they appear to have some pretty substantial debts to the ATO. So
yeah,
I found that as a trend more than anything else, and I it staggers me how a business can rack up a half a million or more debt to the Australian Taxation Office. So, but that I have noticed that quite often when I'm reading about companies that have gone into liquidation and who they owe, I think you'll find the ATO tends to be one of the main creditors, in fact, yeah.
Peter, you're a business owner, and so I'll just ask you this, because most of us don't know. As a business owner, if you borrow money, you pay a higher interest rate than, say, Joe Bloggs buying for a house. Is that right?
Yeah, look, and I think this is one of the things where there's been a lot of publicity around for, you know, these short-term lenders or these, we'll lend to you whereas the banks won't lend to you kind of thing.
Yep.
My experience with those sort of setups, and I fortunately have a bit of a banking background, so I'm able to probably crunch the numbers and they make more sense to me. If you look at the real cost of the borrowing, it's terrible. Like it's almost loan shark territory at sometimes. My comparison that I do is, I probably won't mention the name, but there's one that you probably shouldn't leave home without, that if I compare it with the cost of that, and I've never found any of those lenders, business lenders that are publicised, including by, you know, sort of, industry bodies and things like that, if you actually crunch the numbers, the real rate of borrowing is more than one of those more famous that you shouldn't leave home without type scenarios. So it staggers me that they get promoted. That's what really annoys me, that they get promoted as, you know, go to these people, they'll help you out. But the real cost of borrowing is terrible.
And I guess the other problem is that if you've got to borrow this month to make ends meet, next month you've got to try and pay that back and live again the next month. So you're going to get worse and worse every month, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think once you, unfortunately, it's a slippery slope. You'd be lucky to ever catch up. I think that's probably the essence of it. You've just got to keep shuffling, you know, one to pay the other, and you just get deeper and deeper into a hole.
Yeah, because you really can't borrow to get out of trouble, can you? Once you start to borrow to get out, unless you've got some sort of way you're going to get extra money, but other than that, it's a pretty slippery old slide, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be. Although if you speak to people with that sort of entrepreneur bent, they tell you to borrow as much as you possibly can, and that's what it's all about. That you're rolling the dice and you're capitalising on your opportunities and using the sort of the magnitude of what you're borrowing and what you're investing to try and have that sort of steamroll effect of either coming out with a very big win or, unfortunately, a very big loss.
I was just going to say that. If it goes well, it goes well. And if it goes bad, it goes bad. Peter, we've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Sure.
Thanks.
About being in love, you can see I really feel. One can wake you up.
Welcome back, and we're talking to Peter, our private investigator from Absolute Facts. Peter, you want to talk about cyber attacks. I'll bet they're up, are they?
Yes, you can bet on that. So the Australian Bureau of Statistics have suggested that the cyber security attacks on Australian businesses actually more than doubled in the 21-22 financial year, with 22% of businesses falling victim to a cyber security attack in that period, compared with 8% for the 2019-2020 period. So obviously an increase there. The attacks included scams or fraud, about 16%, malicious software infecting computers, about 5%, and unauthorised access or use, 3%. And then I did a little bit more searching on that to see if there were some more interesting numbers that came out. And I saw a quote saying there'd been a 600% increase in cybercrime during the pandemic.
600?
Yep, and a lot of that was to do with targeting exposed employees who were working remote working or working from home. So, you know, obviously there could be some more, tend to be perhaps some more vulnerability when they're working from home, whether it's their actual, say, Wi-Fi security or the actual security of their computers. The average cost of a cybercrime has risen by about 14%, and the average cost to a small business of a cybercrime is around $39,000. For a medium-sized business, about $88,000. And interestingly, for a large business, it was quoted as $62,000, which was actually lower than the medium. So I'm not sure why that would be. And they're saying that in the past 20 years, there's been 300 cybercrime investigations, resulting in 150 prosecutions. So to me, that seems like a fairly low number.
Yeah, Peter, did I read in the paper the other day, or I imagined this, that there's quite a percentage of the businesses have said, oh, we would pay up rather than be disadvantaged?
The ransomware, yeah. I think I did read something along those lines that I would suspect a smaller business is probably more likely to pay up. You'd like to think a medium and certainly a larger business should have, redundancies in place that they can basically reinstate themselves, even if they lose, perhaps an hour or 24 hours at worst, that they should be able to reboot. But proof of the pudding has been that's not the case when you look at some of the very publicised victims recently.
And the big ones too. Like, they haven't been able to do it that quick, have they?
No. And then the penalty handed down to, was it Medibank that they had to, no, it wasn't Medibank, the one that had to increase their cash reserves. I thought that was a strange punishment, but anyway. So, yeah, cyber crime is definitely something to look out for, and obviously people are hopefully getting more and more savvy in respect to emails and, text messages coming through on the phone. And if you're not sure, you always go to something like ScamWatch or just basically Google whatever the message was you received, and you'll probably find, quite a few people telling you that it's not the real deal.
The trouble is, when you now get a legitimate or should be a legitimate email from someone, like even those, you sort of tend to be a bit sus. Like I had one the other day that I actually rang the people to see, is this fair dinkum? And I said, yeah, of course it is. But you tend to get very jittery, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And one of my biggest bugbear is I barely answer the phone now because 9 out of 10 calls are not from who I want to hear from. So I don't answer the phone as a general rule of thumb unless the person's identified and someone I know.
Yep.
And then you go and have a little look at the number, and needless to say, again, 9 times out of 10, it's been reported as a unwanted phone call.
As a bit of a scam. Peter, I've just got to take another quick break, and we'll be back with more.
Sure.
time. But I say, what the hell are they talking about? The country has been here all the time. There's a lot more people now admitting they like country music after all. Now there's dollar signs alongside country music. It's cowboy boots and hats for one and all. They say the country's middle of the road now. They say they've had enough of all this noise. I suppose the music wheel has turned full circle. Our ballads and our stories now enjoyed. Or they say our music's having a revival. They say that country's on the climb. But I say, what the hell are they talking about? The country has been here all the time. Play Charlie. Just took over. A lot of music just went underground. Then somehow rock got tangled up with country. This country music added to the sound. Oh, they're singing songs I've only just discovered. Just hear them talk about their brand new sound. But there's nothing new about the songs they're singing. It's just that country music's come to town. Hey, oh, they say our music's having a revival. They say the country's on the climb. And I say, what the hell are they talking about? The country has been here all the time. Sure it has. Country has been here all the time.
Yarra Valley FM 99.1 is now broadcasting from new studio facilities at 9 Lilydale Road, Healesville.
Sound so true, it almost startles you.
Feel free to get in touch via email info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. Call us on 59615991 or write to us at Post Office Box 991, Healesville 3777.
It's only the beginning.
Reception so clear, performance so great, you'll wonder what you've been missing.
Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. Always.
I will say, if you're trying to ring us today, you've probably got troubles, because we've just had a couple of phone calls to tell us that our number's not working. So probably not a good idea today, but certainly hopefully by tomorrow we should be back on air. And we're talking to Peter, the private investigator for Absolute Facts. Peter, you want to tell us something about cars. You got me really worried about this one.
Yes, I feel your nervousness. So the background to this is there was a recent publicity about charges being laid against a 40-year-old South Australian man who allegedly rammed a police car and I think threatened officers or something along those lines. But the thing that pricked my curiosity, and I have spoken about this before on other mediums, is they eventually charged the South Australian gentleman with 212 charges, basically a string of thefts that had occurred within the past 3 months. And as part of that, police alleged that the man stole more than 70 catalytic converters, which form part of a vehicle's exhaust. And the value of the 70 converters was listed as $270,000.
Gee.
So that prompted me to say, I know what Alan's question's going to be. He's going, why would someone steal catalytic converters?
That's right.
And the reason is that they contain platinum, palladium and rhodium, all precious metals that are all worth or more valuable than gold.
More valuable than gold?
Yes, and that's so they're basically mining those three metals, and then reselling, putting, you know, gathering what an ingot's worth or half an ingot's worth or whatever, yeah, whichever way you want to term it, and selling it by weight back in as you would with perhaps scrap metal or copper and things like that. Some of the other interesting stats that came out about that, and police actually did issue a warning, I think it might have been about late 2021, saying that Toyota Hiace vans were the hot targets for the loss of a catalytic converter. And to anticipate your next question, Alan, when you go back to your car, how do you know that your catalytic converter's been stolen?
Yep.
And the answer is, when you start your car, and in particular when you accelerate hard, the engine noise is a lot louder than before.
So, Peter, is it only on gas cars or is it on petrol cars? I don't know anything about these.
No, they're on, my understanding is they're on all exhaust systems, aren't they?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm not a car buff. I'm sure one of your car buffs will confirm that, but I'm pretty confident there's a catalytic converter basically on every vehicle.
All right. So the world's their oyster almost for the crook.
Yeah. So basically they'll just go around and I read something that takes about, I think, less than 10 minutes to probably even less than that to scurry under your car, saw off the two bits at either end or either side of the converter, pull the converter out and walk off.
And then they somehow they get the minerals.
Yeah,
out.
So they extract the metal. So they're not reselling the converter per se as a unit. They're extracting the three precious metals and presumably then accumulating a quantity of the precious metals and taking it to their precious metal dealer and trading it in for some hard-earned cash.
Yeah, and probably we know where that's going. All right, we'll just take a quick break. Peter, we're back. Well, we've got a couple of questions for you. We've been waiting for you to come back, so we've got a couple of really good questions for you to take away and bring back next month.
Okay.
Thanks. Peter, we've got a couple of questions for you to take away and have a look at. The first one, I think the person that's asked might be asking for too much. I'm not even sure that they still do record this, but they'd like you to have a look at the petrol drive-offs, if that's possible.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the easy bit. They'd like you to have a look at it month by month if the figures are available. They'd like to see, as each time the interest rates go up, does the incidence...
Is that a factor? Yep.
Yeah, as a factor, whether they start going up. That's the first one.
Okay.
Now, that may be impossible. I don't know, but I can only ask you because we've had two phone calls with that person. The other one is, so another person has asked me, could you have a look at some of the worst scams that you've heard of?
Okay.
Or that you've come across. I mean, we know there are plenty of scams out there, but I'm not too sure how many you come across. But the ones that you have either read about or heard about that you think are the worst scams.
Okay, cool. Yep, I can have a look at that. And again, educating people as to what to look out for, then that's the thing, because, you know, people get that text from Medibank Private or whoever it might be, or someone that... you know, hopefully they're like you said before, their shackles go up straight away because and the companies are getting better at saying, we will never ask you for your password, we'll never ask you to change your password, we'll never ask you for your PIN. And I think just little basic things like that, if you can reinforce that with people, then hopefully they're just that little bit more alert to the scams.
I guess if you could add that to it, Peter, perhaps some suggestions of what people should do or shouldn't do, either should do or shouldn't do or both, so that we can sort of say to people, or you can say to people, if you get this, don't do this or you should do that. So maybe if you could add that to it as well.
Yeah, sure. Top tips, basically, as in prevention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peter, we're fast coming. I've got to get out a bit earlier today because Greg's got to come in. Have you got anything else just over the next 3 or 4 minutes that you'd like to say?
No, what I'll touch to on next month is I think I've touched on this with you before too. There's quite a increase in the providing false driver's licenses around there, and I nearly got to do the homework on it today, but I ran out of time. So I'll cover that next month if you'd like. But there is quite a preponderance of false driver's licenses around at the moment. So, I just started to read the articles about how to spot a fake license, and there were some good tips coming up there. So I might summarise that next time around.
That'd be true.
Particularly for your retailers and people of that ilk.
Is there also a big mark in false ID for young kids? Do you know?
I'd expect so. I haven't done any homework on that for a while, but I expect nothing's changed there, and that's part of it. But this is more people, much older age that are using them for nefarious purposes and hiring vehicles and things like that, renting cars, false licenses and false credit card information and things like that. So I might do a little bit of a profile on that too.
That'd be terrific if you could.
And I've got some homework for you too, Alan, just to throw something back your direction, given that you very generously play a Pink Floyd tune for me.
Yep.
I've got a request for you to see if you can hunt this one down.
Yeah.
So the name of the album is Atom Heart Mother, and the section of the track is called Funky Dung.
F-U-N-K-Y.
Yeah, dung, as in cow dung.
Dung, D-U-N-G.
Yeah.
All right.
So let's see if you can source that one for perhaps next month.
You have, pardon me, thrown out a challenge. I'm always willing to give we'll get it, I'm sure. If it's available, we'll get it for you.
No, it's available. It's, as I said, it's off that album, but it's part of a longer track, but I'm sure you'll turn it up.
And what was the name of the track? The name of the album?
Yeah, Atom Heart Mother.
Atom, A-T-O-M?
Yeah, Atom, yep. And then Heart, and then Mother. Quite a famous album cover because it's got a picture of a cow on the cover.
Right. Have you got that yourself?
Oh, most definitely, yes.
You've probably got just about every one of them.
Well, in fact, yeah, funnily enough, Alan, as part of the declutter and moving process, I refound my Pink Floyd box set, which was the original vinyl versions put out in, I'd have to say, the early 70s. Which is about I think the first 10 albums or so up to Wish You Were Here, as I recall, and they've basically been unplayed. So, I might be sitting on a little nest egg there that I'm not aware of. So, if any listeners are absolute Pink Floyd nuts, they can contact the station and have a chat to me.
Peter, is your wife happy you found it, or is she thinking, "Oh, I wish you hadn't found that"?
Oh, no, she's pretty used to Pink Floyd coming out of the computer. I tend, like most people these days, probably YouTube and SoundBite, or maybe chuck a CD in. So that's why the actual vinyls haven't been played. I don't, in fact, have a working record player these days either. So
a lot of people don't, do they?
No, but coming back into vogue because of the quality of the sound. That's the thing that people are now going back to records, Alan, because they're sick of the digital sound and the digital enhancements.
I mean, for a while there, you couldn't give vinyl away, and now all of a sudden they're getting quite expensive.
Yeah, coming back into vogue. And, of course, then I was asking the question of a friend of mine the other day. I said, so do people still make stylus, you know, for the record players? But apparently that's all coming back into fashion as well, and you can spend anything from $50 to $50,000 on a decent stylus for your record player. So,
gee,
yeah, it's all coming back into fashion.
Well, it's a bit like the old thing: everything goes around, comes around, doesn't it? Like everything.
Yeah.
I'm holding on to my old flares, hoping they're going to come back.
Good luck with that. And the safari suit, you still got your safari suit?
No, I got rid of that. But I'm not sure.
Very good.
As far as I think the things might come back, I'm not sure that some of those things are going to come back, Peter, whether I like it or not.
Mate, you might get a fancy dress party come up, though, but you'll be ready to go.
I tell you what, that would be about the only reason that it would come back into vogue would be for someone just as a fancy dress, wouldn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm the same, although I don't think I'll fit into any of those things anymore. But anyway, that's another story.
Well, you're not in that by yourself, Peter. Peter, look, it's terrific to have you along. We've had Peter, our private investigator from Absolute Facts, along to tell us some more. Peter's going to look at the petrol drive-offs, the scams, and the false driving licences, and we'll speak to you on the first Monday of August by then.
First Wednesday.
What did I say? Monday again?
You said Monday again.
Oh, I'm not even on air on a Monday. I don't know why I keep saying that.
Yep, first Wednesday of August. We'll see you then.
No worries. Thanks, Peter. Thanks for your time.
No worries. Thank you.
Thanks, mate. Bye.